My name is Donning Pollen Shorty. I'm 51 years old. Today is March 16th, 2023. I am in Taos, New Mexico, and I'm here with Manuela, and she is with StoryCorps. So.
I'm Manuela Velasquez. I'm 23. Today is March 16th, 2023. I'm here in Taos, New Mexico, with Donning Pollen Shorty, who's my conversation partner and new friend. So, Pollen, can you tell me about the person who's been kindest to you in your life?
Well, I'm 51, so there's a lot of people. If I was younger, I'd be like, there's one person, two people. No, I'm just kidding. I've been fortunate. I think my life-wise, with having a supportive family, a mom and a dad, a brother and a sister, and I've known two of my great-grandparents and three of my grandparents. So I think that's really lucky. My grandma died a couple of years ago at age 102. So I had a grandma for a really long time. And I think that's really lucky too. And I still have my parents. So a lot of people my age are losing parents, or, you know, there's a lot of friends who have. And so it's a scary thought to me because I've always had them and together, mm-hmm. which I thought was kind of rare. One day, there's a lot of parents who are divorced, and there's a lot of parents who have children with other partners. So I kind of thought, for my age group, I think, to have the same parents with the same father and mother with my brother and sister was also kind of starting to become a unique thing, because there's a lot of blended families nowadays, because it's more open, I think, too, with marriages being accepted more. They don't have to hide and not, you know, or not go be together because of stigmas or racism or whatever. So with that being said, there's a lot of blended families. So I kind of look at mine and I'm like thinking we're kind of unique that way, I think. Mm-hmm. Kind people, I don't think I could have gotten here to where I'm at in my life with my career and my health and my mental health, my physical health, without people being nice to me. So it's kind of hard to just point out one person, but I guess if I have to answer, I would say that my teachers have been very kind to me. There is such a thing as having a bad teacher, I know, because I've had them, and I'm a teacher myself. And I know how important that is and how powerful it is to be kind. And I think once a person shows that character, then it opens up to learning. So I think my kind teachers, all of them, mm-hmm. from grade school through college, were kind. You know, for the most part, were kind. They wanted to teach. They wanted to share their knowledge, and not everybody wants to do that. Mm-hmm. So I think that my teachers were probably the most kind to me, because it's not like they're not their relative, you know. It's like my auntie's kind to me, my mom, you know. That's kind of a given for the most part. So I'm talking about people who have no relation to you, who are just kind, you know, mm-hmm. let you turn in a paper late. That's one of my archaeology teachers in college was, let me take a test late. And I was so elated because I thought I was going to flunk, and it was a hard subject, and I was crying and telling him my reason for not being there on test day, which was a lie, by the way. I think I just like missed the school, or, you know. Then I had to come up with some kind of excuse, and I'm just begged. And he just kept saying, oy vey, oy vey, throughout the whole, like, and this is why, mine, oy vey, oy vey. And then he let me take the test, and I passed, but it was his kindness, you know, that let me do that, because he didn't have to do that. Mm-hmm. As many times as he said, oy vey. Yeah. It's like. Yeah. But then I went in to take the test, and there were two other people taking the test. So I was like, wait a minute. I thought I was special. But it was just kind acts like that. I never forgot him, and he's a brilliant man and was one of my favorite classes.
Mm-hmm. So you said that you're a teacher. What do you teach now, and like, what made you want to get into teaching?
I think it was innate for me to become a teacher, hence studying like archaeology, anthropology, and all that. I wanted to go in the field, and I'm an artist, and I wanted to document what was being excavated in that field, in that study, in that discipline, because a lot of the stuff is Native American archaeological sites, and I'm Native American. So I just thought it would be important to have a Native American person on site and to document that, because they're excavating potentially your ancestral, literally it could be your biological ancestors' sites if you do a DNA test. Like, it could be that. So I just thought that would be crucial to have an Indigenous person in that kind of space documenting. And those studies took me back to documenting, which took me to photography, which I always liked and studied. And then it took me back to art. So it was something that I really just happened organically, didn't have any control over it. And I just was the type of person in college that just took every subject. I stayed in there for a long time. But I know a little bit about everything because of it.
I feel
even
bad.
African dance. And I didn't need that for my discipline, but there I was taking it. But I just love learning, and it's important because you never stop. Mm-hmm. Once you graduate or what, you know, whatever, you don't stop learning. You always are learning. And so that was being in university was important to develop that skill, to try to be open to different things. So, but I teach art. So I became an artist. I've always been an artist. I didn't become one. I just always have. My parents are artists. My grandparents are artists, artist models, and writers, and dancers, and playwrights, and it just was something that I was destined to do. I saw it growing up, and I know there's this thing now called Nepo babies, right? And it's in Hollywood, and if your mom's in the movie, then you're going to get in the movie, and I do understand that. And it's kind of a gray area, kind of weird to, you know, how that's happening. But I can understand it because my parents are artists, and that's what I do. And when you have your kid, like, you know, and you show them that, don't be surprised if that's what they're going to do. And most of the time, I would say 90%, they're going to try it. But I did try not to be an artist, hence the archaeology. I'm like, I'm going to be a scientist. But I just then realized science is really closely related to art.
Mm-hmm.
And it always just came back to art.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me more about, like, when you say, like, science is really closely related to art? Like, what does that look like for you?
Well, because art, you get inspired by nature. Mm-hmm. And in nature, there's fractals, and that's a science, and that's numbers, and there's symmetry, there's asymmetry, there's shadows, how the sun is setting, the light it makes, when you're drawing, there's a light source or not. That's all science, that's physics. And if you don't understand that, then your drawings might look a little kooky, but kooky could be good. You know, maybe you might not need it.
You're going for
and art is evolving, and it's not, you know, nobody's wrong. But the first true inspiration is from nature, the cave paintings in Lascaux with the animals, and, you know, and it's always been, you know, and of course it evolves with flat, like Egyptian, you know, with no 3D effect. And then you start to evolve with getting distance and curves. And that's where the light comes in.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the light comes in. And people were, and probably were thought of as witches, because that's such a crazy idea to, you know, to think of that as science, or to harness light, you know, like that was probably like, so artists have been persecuted for years, hundreds of, and still are, for just expressing something that is so natural or they need to, whether it's something you like or not.
Mm-hmm.
People, art critics, everybody's a critic. But the science is, if you can understand that, then I think that you can reach more people who think, I don't like art. I don't know art. I can't do anything. Because as an art teacher, I hear that a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how to draw. I can't draw a straight line or a circle or, you know.
That how old kind are of your stuff. Students?
I've had kindergarten through college.
Okay, yeah.
And they're
yeah.
all the same. No difference. The college students will be like, I'll take you out to lunch. The kindergartens didn't do that. I think that was the difference. they all begged for A's. They all had the same. I'm going to get an A. So then if you are open to that notion of science being related to art and creativity, then I think it opens up a lot. The spirograph, you know, stuff like that. It's, you know, you just got to be open. And sometimes you don't even know that it's coming out scientific or sacred geometry, or people just do that innately. And I think that's just human nature. It just comes out. And that's from observing nature. Mm-hmm. Water, the way it moves, and the colors, and skin tones, and hairstyles, and whatever. So that's all biology. That's all science. So that's how it relates to art for me. So then with pottery, with clay, because I'm a clay artist. I mean, I do all different kinds of stuff. But I am most known right now for my clay art. My dad's a sculptor, and I think that influenced me a lot. I watched him admirably, like just watch him draw and watch him draw me, my sister. My brother wasn't born yet. Watched his beautiful handwriting, watch him write beautiful handwriting, showing us how to do exercises for writing and drawing and stuff. I forgot where I was going with that. I do clay. My dad's a sculptor. So then I, if you don't know the weather, which is also a science, are you going to go dig clay? It's raining outside right now. March 16th, right outside, it's raining. Today's not a day you get clay. So then you have to, like, mind the weather. And the sun will dry out your clay. So I have to work in a controlled environment because I can't work outside. Because any wind, the clay immediately starts getting hard. And you got to work fast if you're going to do that. So you got to be aware of that science and just be in tune with nature for what I do. And that's what I think. I don't know how other people think about it, but I, the weather affects everything. I think Navajo weavers, I'm half Navajo, my father's Navajo. My grandfather was a code talker. My dad was in Vietnam, and my grandpa was in World War II. And the Navajo weavings, which my grandmother was a weaver, they can't weave when it's moisture in the air, because it does stretches the wool or something with the wool. So they even have to know about stuff like that. They have to be in tune with nature. And I think when you live in the city, you just don't know. I grew up at the Taos Pueblo in the North House with my mom, my dad, and my sister. My brother's 10 years younger than us. And but he wasn't around yet, but it was neat growing up at the Pueblo. He got to experience it too, but such an age gap. So when we lived there, it was a little bit different. And you just get in tune with nature. You don't have a choice, because the whole Pueblo, people had gas lanterns, propane, and so we didn't. We had kerosene lanterns and candles in the fireplace. And you go to bed when it gets dark, and you wake up when the sun comes up. And you don't live inside. That's like a Western. I'm going to stay home all day inside. Yeah, the Pueblo, you don't do that. You live outside, and your home is for sleeping and eating. and then you do stuff outside. Of course, in the wintertime, you might be more confined because it's snowing and we're going to be, but to spend all your time in your room. And I'm going to read tonight and turn on my lamp and turn on the light. And you don't have that at the Pueblo. Mm-hmm. There's a certain time grew up. There's a certain time for everything, even reading and eating. A lot of people don't eat in the dark or late at night. They eat there is a time for everything, even chewing gum. Mm-hmm. We don't chew gum at night at the Pueblo. Or I was raised that way. There's just something you don't do. You don't comb your hair at night. There's just certain things. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of Native people have rules like this. I grew up with them. And so there's just a time for everything. But being in tune with nature, knowing where the sun is, knowing that you have so much time for light, mm-hmm. you have so much time to play outside, but you have to get your water at the river, mm-hmm. which happens in the morning. And then you know about not wasting water because you got the water for your bath, for your drinking, you want to brush your teeth, go to the river and get some water. So I grew up not lazy like that. I think, and I don't want to say, maybe that's not a good word to use, because there's a lot of not lazy people that have running water. But I don't know if they grew up that way. And to pray. Praying is huge, to ask the Creator, thanking them for what you have and not for what you don't have. Because you see people, if you watch TV and all that, it makes you feel bad for what you don't have. Mm. If you're living at the Pueblo especially. Mm-hmm. You don't have the luxury of plugging in your phone. You don't have that. You have to talk to each other and be present. There's no living in the past or in the future. You have to be present. And so I feel like that's kind of a part of my style, how I live now. Mm-hmm. But I do have running water and electricity nowadays. Different but things. I want to go back. Mm-hmm. The Pueblo house is still there.
Oh, yeah.
And it's still, you just need to walk in and build a fire and get your water. It's work immediately.
Immediately.
Immediately. You're sweeping because it's dusty. You can't be afraid of the dirt. You can't be afraid of Mother Earth. If you have that, then you don't belong there, mm-hmm. because it is dusty. And that's just part of it. You just have to accept that. And that's probably might seem dirty to a lot of people. And then that's the sad part of, if you want to let that bother you. But it comes up for racial stuff, dirty Indians. Maybe they're in a ceremony where they can't have a bath for 4 days, or whatever, I don't know. I don't know where I was going with that, but it's to be close to the earth and the dirt. It's a good thing. And I think my grandma told me that people are sick because they're so, want to be so clean, and they're not acclimating their body to the nature. And that's why it's important for little kids to play with and eat dirt and to put it and rub it. But if you're totally sanitizing them, then their immune systems can't build. Mm-hmm. And I really believe that. You can believe what you want, but I actually believe that. And I've never been in the hospital. I've never been on any medicinal regimen. I don't even remember if I took penicillin for 2 weeks. I never did that. I've been really lucky with my health and that, but I can't imagine being sick and going to the doctor. A lot of Native Americans are sick. They are diabetic, and there's a lot of alcoholism and drug abuse. And I work with, right now, people who are in recovery, and I do art with them. And that's healing for me too. So, mm-hmm. But it's because our systems are not acclimated to 500 years of discovery. That's not very long ago. And my grandmother, I think she's the one who maybe first had a first soda. That's my mom's mom. That's not a long time to get from her natural, eating natural stuff 100% to like Pop Rocks and whatever, bologna or whatever is making people sick. Mm-hmm. And then to have that kind, be able to have that kind of food is a luxury. So it was good. And it was a stigma if you could afford that crappy food. And you were kind of like, you're poor because you're eating what you grew on the field or what you gathered when it was wild, or you're eating your hunted elk or, you know, whatever, which was really good for you. Mm-hmm. But because that was, I maybe considered, oh, they're poor. They're eating beans. Is that all? We're having spaghetti or, you know, and that look, TV dinners. And I think the diet started to change because of that. Mm-hmm. So it was a good, it was a sign of wealth to have junk food and that kind of stuff. And I think that really affected people's health.
Could you tell me more? I know that we like pointed out this question earlier, but it sounds like food and like the work that goes into like everyone creating like a meal together or like an activity together, mm-hmm. is really important to you. And I wanted to know more if you could describe a typical family dinner when you were growing up. Like, what did you eat? Where did you sit? And what were the dynamics of, like, putting that together?
Well, I had a pretty diverse childhood because my parents were artists, and they went to a lot of dinners and receptions and gallery openings. So there was a lot of shrimp and scallops and caviar and champagne. We had that. But my uncles were hunters, and they fished, and we have ceremonial food, and they grow corn, and there is a time to eat like that too. So I had that too. And then just, I'm a kid from the 80s and stuff, and the meatloaf is normal and catfish and all that stuff. But we still have our native food. When I was little at the Pueblo, we would eat on the floor, me and my mom and my dad and my sister. She was really cool. She'd put, like, in front of the fireplace, she'd put like a little tablecloth. And then we'd have the food all set and the fireplace would be really romantic, actually, if you think of it now. Candlelight, and my mom and my dad all young, and we were just kids, and we would be eating steak and mushrooms and, you know, whatever, you know, was a nice meal. We ate out a lot. We went to a lot of different restaurants, nice restaurants. We ate out a lot. And I think also, because we lived at the Pueblo and it was kind of easier to go out to eat. Let's go to Santa Fe and get a room. Because my father's a sculptor and he would sell a sculpture piece maybe in Santa Fe. So then we would get a nice hotel room and go shopping for like 2 days and take bubble baths and all that stuff. Then we go back home to the Pueblo. So it was very diverse at grandma's house. She had table and food, breakfast at 8, lunch at 12, dinner at 5, the typical, you know. My grandfather in Albuquerque, he lived in Albuquerque, my dad's dad, and he was a Marine, and he was very regimented. Breakfast at 8, lunch at noon, dinner at 5, the square triangle, what's that, the food, bread, and you need, like, he was very, mm-hmm. and he was strict. And his house was spotless. And so there was that. I don't know. I did everything. Picnics. We did a lot of picnics. My parents liked the outdoors. We went camping a lot when we were growing up. Sometimes so much we would go to school from camping because my parents were so, my mom loved it. Even if it was a school, like we were in schools in session, we were just, so what? And then we would bathe in the river. Very bohemian, but it's just natural. That's just how it was. My life, I don't know, but everybody has their own story, but that's how it was. And I like that I experienced that. I like that I did that. It made me who I am today, and I think about those, and those memories give me energy and happiness, but also sad because the time is over, mm-hmm. you know, and that's it. It's done. Yeah.
Do you, like, what is your life kind of like today? And do anyone in your family still live in the Pueblo? Or
I have family members who live at the Pueblo, but nobody that lives in the Pueblo. Because mm-hmm. living in the Pueblo is, like I said, you gotta be prepared. Mm-hmm. Before you're going to go to the bathroom. Or do you have a bathroom set up? You know, it's not easy, so it's a lot of work. But once you get the work done, it's so cool. But there are people who live around the Pueblo that mm-hmm. my whole family is out there. Extended family, two cousins, and my grandma's cousin's family. Everybody's at the Pueblo. There are people who live in Albuquerque. My dad's family's in Albuquerque and Chicago and California. They're all over the place. But I have my family. And then I'm part Lakota, so I have my family up in South Dakota, too, my cousins, which I don't really see too often. That's my grandpa. My mom's dad is from up there. And my grandma, my mom's mom, is from Taos Pueblo. Then my dad's Navajo. He's from Arizona or Utah. But the South Dakota was always a big mystery to me. It just was far. And those families came down. So I got to see them, mm-hmm. but I never went to South Dakota until a couple of years ago. I went with my mom. We did a road trip. It was interesting.
A road trip with your mom.
Well, yeah. And just to see South Dakota, because I don't know. I'm so connected to Taos Pueblo, and I was mm-hmm. initiated here, and that's the language that I know outside of English. And I'm from Taos Pueblo, but I know that I'm part Navajo, and I'm connected with that family real close because they're closer. Mm-hmm. And but the South Dakota, I never saw the land. Mm-hmm. Like, I've been to Arizona. I was born in Arizona in Ganado, at Sage Memorial Hospital, and I know what the Navajo Reservation looks like, and I know what Taos Pueblo and the mountains look like. I know that. South Dakota was just pictures and oral history, oral stories. And I don't know why my parents never took me. My grandpa used to go every chance he got. And then my mom said that when they were little, they went every summer, at least for a couple weeks or a month or whatever, but they went every summer.
Wow.
And then I was like, well, it just was never even a thought, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I would hear all these South Dakota jokes or references, and I just didn't even understand them. And then a couple years ago I got to go up and see the land, and I was just taken aback, because for one thing, I had never been there. I've been to Montana. I dated a guy when I was in art school, and he was from Montana, and I kind of was thinking, well, maybe it's similar. Even back then, when I was in Montana, I was like, this must be what South Dakota is. Then I was, and he's Blackfeet. So then I was thinking, this must be what the Sioux people, but they're not. You can't compare apples and oranges. It's totally different tribe and different speaking, and even the landscape is different. Mm-hmm. But I didn't have a reference. I just knew Northern Plains was, I amalgamated everybody, basically, is what. And so that's why travel is so important. It's really, if you're not going to go to school, if you're going to drop out or whatever, but at least travel. That way you can learn, you know, stuff. But so then I went up and saw the land, and I was, like I said, taken aback. And there was so much sky and just hills, no mountains. And I just miss the mountains because I'm so used to them. And then I just try to think of how my people survived there, like living like that. Like, it's just the winters must be harsh and the summers must be harsh. And what do people do? Because here in Taos, like, we have this beautiful library that we're sitting in talking. There's a nice little plaza with some nice little shoes you can buy for $400. You know, there's a nice little restaurant here that you can get diver scallops. They don't have that in South Dakota or Montana, which is why our relationship didn't work out. Just kidding. So I was just like, I can't believe I'm from here. It's what I was saying. I'm from here. These are my people. This is your tribe. And I just was like, okay. It's kind of it's probably like feeling adopted and then meeting your parents, your biological. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my God, I'm black. When you're being adopted by white people, you know what I mean? Like, I'm with my black family. And this kind of was like that. It's like, this is so trippy. But I'm just like, this is my people. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad I'm here to experience that. And it made me feel proud. And I was thinking about Dances with Wolves, that movie, because that was my reference. That's my people. That's what tribe I am. And actually, when I explain to people who I am and when I say I'm Sioux, that's what I tell them, just to give them because they don't know sometimes. Like, what? They amalgamate all Native Americans. They don't know that there's so many different diverse groups. So, and everybody kind of knows what a code talker is for the Navajos. They're kind of famous. But, and Taos is beginning to be known. It was an obscure little Pueblo. Now it's kind of like on the map. But, it's funny. They have a casino up there.
In South Dakota.
I'm not into casinos. Yeah, I'm just not. It's not my thing, but whatever. That's where the hotel was. And we went in the nighttime, so I didn't get to see the landscape till I woke up in the next day. And we got our room, and then we started calling our cousins, and we're here, and you know, that stuff. And then I started seeing how our tribe up there lives compared to here at the Pueblo with housing and stuff. Mm-hmm. Those are things that just stick out to Native people right away, kind of unspoken. It's like, oh, I'm looking at their houses. I guess it might be government housing because they all look kind of, they have streets. Mm. We don't have that so much here at the Pueblo, but these are actual like little streets. And then the street names are cool. Sitting Bull Lane. You know, those like chief names. I don't know. I can't think of another chief. Boulevard. They use words like Boulevard. And I'm just like, okay. That's funny. We got there and the casino is like a big deal. And we're going to go to the casino tonight and I'll blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, okay, I'm here. Let's win in Rome, you know. So like I'm putting my makeup on and like more, I don't really wear too much makeup, but I was putting it on that night. And then my cousins were like, I don't know why you're putting on makeup. You're related to everyone down there. And I was like, oh my God, I really am from here. Like, I can come from 1,000 miles and still be like, oh, he's cute. Oh, he's your cousin. I was like, oh, okay. But it was funny because when we started talking about who we were visiting, everyone was like, I'm your cousin.
That's so funny.
So everybody was my cousin, and I couldn't believe it. I was a total stranger at the store. Hey, I'm your cousin, and I'm George Shack's granddaughter. Oh, I'm your cousin, and I just was like, it was really funny. It was crazy. The gas station. I mean, just like so insane.
That's so unique to like have it be. I mean, like so much of your family and like so much of your past, but like somewhere that you had never experienced before.
And these are like blood relatives. These aren't people just claiming, claiming you. These are actually, so that was cool.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of relatives out there.
Mm-hmm. I know that like you don't have children. Do any of your siblings have children or is
not that I know of.
Not that you know of. I'm wondering if there's like, which is so fun.
Sorry, Shell.
I'm just curious about it.
I when people say that, that's my joke, by the way.
Not that I know.
If they ask me, do you have children? But they have this really, I have to be like straight face. Mm-hmm. And I just say, not that I know of. And then they don't know what to think. And it always takes them a couple of seconds. But. Yeah, I always say that. Not that I know of.
We love it. The mystery of children. Because I'm thinking just about how much, like, it seems like it's been an interesting journey for you to, like, feel so connected to pieces of your past and like different communities of ancestors, and then kind of be discovering anew at different points. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, wow, like I'm of these people too. And I'm wondering, like, if you have any thoughts or like feelings about what you would want to like pass on to like the next generation, or like any like teachings or wisdom on like feeling connected to those past, like those people of your past. And I know that like you don't have children that you know of, so it might be a different answer.
I might have somebody. No, I don't know. I think that people, there's this whole like, what's that genealogy thing where you can send in a sample of your DNA, and I don't know about that kind of stuff. I mean, I'm like, I love science, and then I'm like, I don't know about that. But it's just a trip, you know. All this suppressed knowledge, we shouldn't even need that test if you were just open about who you were having sex with and creating. Were you that embarrassed? I guess, don't ever say that word, German, you know. And then 50 years later, the kid's like, I want to see what I am, you know, and sending in a swab for $200. I don't know. It just, yeah, I think we wouldn't need that if people just were just straight up honest about what their genealogy was. So that just proves that a lot of that births and people and the population just were not informed of who they were and what circumstances were they born under, that they were hidden. So now people want to know, what am I? That's the main question of the day. What am I? What are you? Can I make money off of being what I am? And there's that. If I can prove I'm Indian, maybe then I can make Indian art and sell it. Or I don't know. It goes to that. So it's really a mixed bag. But in a nutshell, I think it's important to know who you are. That way, you know what your story is. And it's important. It's important. And a lot of people might not like what it is in their past, but it also might answer a lot of questions of why they make a certain decisions, or why their hair is curly, or why their skin is light, or why their eyes are green. There are scientific facts to show you why that is. And if you understand it, then maybe you can help someone, or just go back to where you found out you were part of and learn more about your culture and yourself. You don't know. But I think that people should understand what genealogically.
Yes.
Genealogically.
It's a big word.
What their path, what their story is. And answer a lot of questions. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm still searching. I know I'm part Basque. My father has Basque ancestry. I didn't know that. And I didn't know how to feel about that when I first found out, because I was raised 100% Native American. You're Native American. And when I found out, I remember I was sitting at a bar. Well, I had already found out, but I was sitting at a bar, and some guy was trying to talk to me. And he's like, where are you from? What are you? What are you? They want to know what you are, because are you Chinese? And you speak such good English. I'm confused. Your skin is, you know, what are you? So then I just said, I'm Basque. Because I am. I just found out, and I'm testing it out on this guy. And then he goes, oh, so you're from Europe. And then that just made me. Good thing I was a bar, because I needed a drink after that. I can't handle this. I'm from Europe, he just told me. But, you know, if you can take that in any direction you want. But it's historically, my great-great-grandfather came here from Basque. Mm-hmm. The Navajos kidnapped him. He was raised with the Navajo people. And then he then became an interpreter for treaties. His name was Jesus Arviso, which is my father's mother's maiden name, Arviso. And he was then, they told, the Navajo people said, then you can go back to mask. You're free. We captured you and you're done. Time served. You could leave or you could stay and take a wife, do what you want. You're free. So we stayed with the Navajo people and took a Navajo wife. And those are my great-grandparents. So there is a little bit of Basque.
Just a pinch. Thanks. Paula, it's been so interesting learning about your family history and yourself. And, like, I wish we could keep talking for a lot longer.
I know.
Than this.
We have 25 questions here.
I think we are running out of time. But I just wanted to say thank you so much. And, you know, if there's anything else you want to add, like, on the recording before we finish, like,
okay, one more thing. So when we found out, my dad found out he was Basque. He was buying all this Basque cheese. My mom was getting so mad. She was just like, sorry for snorting. I don't know. But that's genuine. That just means it's a genuine recording. That snorting is not going to get edited. But yeah, it was really funny. She was like all mad because my dad is just like buying all any kind of Basque cheese he could find. And I thought that was funny. That's
so you know? I hope it was good cheese. You're going to have a lot.
No, she's like, your dad's buying all this cheese. And we're Basque, so we need to buy this cheese. So there's a lot of humor in the family, you know, so I'm really glad for that. And my dad's family, we just laugh. Laughter is so good to laugh. And I think we need that more. So that's why I ended this little talk with that funny anecdote. True. All true.
All true. Well, thank you so much, Paula.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Thank you.